Well, good morning. An honor to have an opportunity to learn with you, having come so far for such a short visit. I'd like to address the topic, at least thank you very much, to give a framework, a halachic framework for an interesting question which comes up in my kehillah and other communities, I'm certain, with regard to people who reside in one country and have incomes in another country, and is there an obligation to report the money that one makes in their place of residence if that money never enters into the country? It can happen more and more today in the complex business climate in which we work. A person can live in the United States, which is the other side of the Atlantic, if you haven't heard of it before, and can have an income in Asia someplace, and can be earning money and putting it in a bank in Asia, and by United States law, for example, they must claim that income. And the question would be, according to halacha, we have the principle of dina de malchusa, dina, which is mentioned a number of times in the Talmud, in Shas, an obligation to uphold those practices which local government insists on. So would I have an obligation to report to the United States government any money that I have made abroad? And I talked to some of the Dayanim here in England also, and apparently this is a Shiloh which would be relevant here as well. Money is certainly an area of legitimate concern. I don't know about here in Great Britain, but there's a movement afoot in Arzot Habris in America to rescind the prohibition on polygamy that's associated with the Cherem of Rabbi Gershon. And of course the rationale to rescind this is because, as you may have heard, it's getting increasingly difficult for a young man to survive on the income of one father-in-law alone. So let's move on. The Gemara says, "Kashas zivugim kakriyas yamsuf," that matching up shidduchim is more difficult, at least as difficult as the splitting of the Red Sea. And of course, in some circles, they say this is why we have the statement, "Ilu nafamano es mamonam balo kolalano es ayam dayenu." It would have been sufficient to give us the money without splitting the ocean. So let's take a look at the concept of dina de malchusa dina, this obligation that we have to uphold and to respect local chok, local civil law. Let's first try to get a perspective of with what authority does the Torah regard the right, so to speak, of the non-Jewish government to institute rules and to institute laws that might govern the financial status of Jews? What is the authority, as we understand it from our perspective? And of course, this shows up a number of times in halacha. One of the most ubiquitous examples would be with regard to paying taxes. The local government can levy a tax, and the Jewish resident of that country has to pay that tax if he's living there. So what is the authority with which we invest, or we believe the Torah has invested the Akum, the non-Jewish government, to insist that they can take money from other people? So there are really two interesting sources. One is a Rashi in Gittin. Rashi in Gittin on Daf Tes says that this concept of dina de malchusa dina, it's nothing more than an extension of that single mitzvah, that single mitzvah say of the mitzvahs b'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, which is a positive commandment, and the b'nei Noach are mitzvah to institute dinim. They are obligated by a pre-Sinai, we might say, mandate to follow a number of mitzvahs, and one of those is to institute a court system, to institute dinim. And so Rashi says that what flows with that concept is the idea that anything that's necessary in order to keep up that government, such as levying taxes, would be mitzvah, would be included in that chiyuv b'nei Noach. So that would be, according to Rashi, the authority of the b'nei Noach to do things like set up rules and set up fines and penalties and taxes and so on. Now, there's a Rasha, the famous Drushas Haran, who gives a different motif to it. And the Drushas Haran, what he says is the Torah is emes. That's not disputable. The Torah is emes, the Torah is just, and the Torah is predicated entirely on truth. And therefore, anything that's for Tovas Harabim, anything that's for the betterment of society, the Tovas Harabim is included, ipso facto, it's included in this overriding principle of emes. And so therefore, this would be the Occam's authority to institute taxes, because this is necessary for the upkeep of the government, and therefore we also must participate in Tovas Harabim. So this would be the Shita of the Ran. Now, what are the themes that the Rishonim understand now that we have a basis for taxes being part of Dina D'Malchusa? What do the Rishonim describe as our relationship, our orientation to paying taxes? How do we understand the theme behind our submitting to that Dina D'Malchusa Dina? So there are three principles in the Rishonim. There are three descriptions that are given, and I'll go through them quickly. There's the Shita of the Rashbam. The Rashbam is in Bava Basra on Daf Nun Dalet. And the Rashbam says that any time we reside under the authority of another government, whether we're Jewish, or whether it's non-Jewish people who move into a particular regime or a particular province, so we willingly accept upon ourselves any of the practices, any of the customs, at least those which are not directly contrary to halacha, because this is a condition of residence in that area. So the Rashbam says that the Dina D'Malchusa mandate that the Jew will follow when he's living in another jurisdiction will be one that he and all Jews accept willingly. This is a condition of residence. And this is the Shita of the Rashbam. So if I'm living in the United States, or I'm living in Argentina, I'm living in Scotland, wherever I might be, so I understand that the condition that I must practice in order to exercise that right to live under the protection of that government is that I will adhere to Dina D'Malchusa, which will also mean that I'll pay taxes there. The Shita of the Ran, and the Ran is in the Dorim, you'll find it on Chof Ches. So the Shita of the Ran is also mentioned by Luki Yosef, who's appended to the Rif in that same part of the Dorim. So he says a more, maybe a provocative spora. And he says that the reason that I have to adhere to Dina D'Malchusa Dina, the reason that I have to adhere to these rules and practices when I live in someone else's jurisdiction is because they can throw me out. They have the right to evict me, to banish me from living there, and therefore, lest I come to a situation of being homeless and penniless and chol Hashem and everything that will go along with that, I am bound to adhere to local practice. So therefore, I'll have to pay taxes because I know that if I don't, I'll be thrown out, and this will give horrible reputation, and not to mention that I'll be without a source of income. So therefore, according to the Shita of the Ran, the rationale for me needing to adhere to tax paying, to reporting my income and paying tax if I'm living in another country, is in order to protect my own stability. I'm not going to jeopardize that because I know that they can throw me out. So we have the Shita of the Rashbam, we have the Shita of the Ran, and then we have an interesting third sheet of the Rashba. This Rashba can be found in Yevamos on Daf Mem Vav. And the Shita, the principle of the Rashba is that when I submit to living under the leadership of a foreign government, I can be living in Bulgaria, or I can be living in Paraguay, but if I'm going to go to a foreign country and I'm going to live there, so something very magnificent happens, and that is that I take on the status, a Jew in Gaulis, a Jew in exile, so to speak, takes on the status of a shovoy. I take on the status of a captive, which means the very fact that this king could coerce me to do things, he could imprison me, fast for sholem, he could take me captive, he could treat me like a casualty of war and confiscate everything that I owned. So this gives him almost a Hefker based in Hefker type of property. And therefore, because he could at whim, that government could at whim, go and confiscate everything that I have, if he says, I am going to insist that you give me 10% or a certain percent or a certain amount of your income or of your profits, so I must submit to this because, in essence, I am a temporary captive in his place. So these are the three shitas. Either it's a matter of willful resignation to local practice, either it's resignation to local practice lest I be banished and evicted, or it could even be, as Raspo says, it could be a coercive mandate that I have to be willing to give away my money because, after all, in a manner of speaking, the local government owns that money or could appropriate my money. So now the question would be, what would happen if I'm living in a certain area and, as we've said, I am bound to adhere to Dina de Malchusa, and the local government is well within its right to have Dina Malchus. What would happen if I'm living in a different area? And as we said, I'm living in California, and I have an income in Asia someplace, so I have an income living in Israel. Do I need to report to the government where I reside that I am making money? So now, it would be fanciful. It would be interesting to speculate that according to the first sheet, according to the Ran, which is brought down by many Poskim, that the rationale to pay taxes where I live is because this is the condition of residence. So speculative, interesting to say that this is something that I've accepted upon myself, and regardless of where I make that money, I do have to continue this practice of paying them a tax, because after all, I've agreed, by moving there, I've agreed to follow their laws, although there is a Trumas Adeshin. I think you'll find it in Siman Shin Mem Aleph, the Tshuva and Trumas Adeshin, who says that the scope of that run is only for people who have been koveya dira in that place, which means that it is a condition for me to adhere to Bina de Malchusa there only if that is my place of residence. But in the event I would be living in a different country, and this happens, people maintain dual citizenships, so one would conjecture it is possible that if I live in California, but I'm also koveya dira in Israel, or I'm living in Czechoslovakia, where I'm also making money part of the year, one could speculate that, according to the Ran, that the Dina Malchusa would not obligate me to report income. If I'm living here, would not obligate me to report it if I have concurrent dira there. And again, it's not something that the Poskim have worked out well, but that's talking about whether there's any leverage according to the Trumas Adeshin's understanding of the Ran, whether there would be that leverage. Now, according to the Rashbam, that the theme behind my needing to adhere to local practice, to Dina de Malchusa, is because I don't want to be thrown out. I don't want to break laws and find that I'm no longer welcome in that country. So then we would say that if I'm earning money elsewhere, and in fact there are laws, say, in America, that if I earn money, if I'm in Yugoslavia, that I must report it to the Internal Revenue Services, which is what we call it there, or if you have I understand from one of the Dayanim with whom I spoke yesterday, you have something similar to that in this country. So if the local law says that if I'm earning money there, then I'm still bound to report it here, and if not, then I am guilty of a crime of some sort, or they can coerce me, they can cause me difficulty. So it would seem that according to the sheets of the Rashbam, that I would in fact have to be very, very scrupulous and make sure that if I'm earning money in a different location, and my country of residence in Gaulis, such as Great Britain or Wales, wherever I might be, if they demand that I actually report that income, so then if I'm going to be suffering any type of criminal charges or any other type of penalties, according to the sheet of the Rashbam, it would seem I would be bound and obligated to report income wherever I earn it. I'd have to report it to my place of residence. According to the sheet of the Rashbam, this is probably the one where we would say there may be the most leeway within halachic theory to say that if I'm living there and earning money, but my country of residence is over here, one would conjecture that if the whole justification for Dirna Malchusa, for tax payment, is because the place where I live has the right to confiscate my money because I'm like a captive in their country. So if they don't have the right to confiscate the money I'm earning abroad, if they're not able to confiscate it because I'm really under the control of wherever I earn the money, so we might speculate that according to the sheet of the Rashba, I would not have that obligation. And again, I'm just trying to build a halachic framework for us to understand this. Halacha l'maisa, in practical matters, we must ask a posek who is well versed in these areas. But those would be the three sheets of the Rishonim which we want to think about when we're looking into the Shaila. Now, there are some ancillary issues with regard to Dirin Mahusa that we want to be aware of. For example, is that obligation that I have to respect the Dine Mahus, is this something that has Doraisa gravity, which means the responsibility I have to adhere to local law, is this binding on me with the gravity of a Torah obligation, or is this something of rabbinic severity? So when I think about paying my taxes, whether it's the Ran, whether it's the Rashba, whether it's the Rashba, so when I'm thinking about paying my taxes, I'm not paying my taxes. So is that a matter of a Doraisa infraction if I try to hide my income, or is that a matter of a Derabanan? We can look into the issue of Gezel Akram. I don't want to go there for this particular talk because it's of much broader scope. But it's important to know that we have really a fairly even split among our poskim as to whether this obligation I have to pay things because of Dina Damachusa, is this binding with Torah gravity, or is this a Dinda Rabbanan? We mentioned before the Shita of Rashi, and we mentioned before the Drashas Halam, who say that the authority with which the Akram, the authority with which the civil law can institute an obligation to pay, is a Doraisa status. Either it's because this is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs, this is one of their Torah-clad responsibilities with which they operate in this world, which is the Shita Rashi, or as the Drashas Halam said, that this is something that even supersedes, it transcends Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. This is Tovah Sarabim, this is part of Torah, which is emes, which is just, which involves abject integrity. But even though their obligation to levy taxes may have, as we said, this very transcendent, derisive type of quality to it, there's nonetheless a machlokas among our poskim achronim as to my adhering to it, am I bound at a derisive level or the rabbanim level. The tshuva of Ramah, in Sinna Pei Zion, if you'll take a look, argues that this is a derabbanim, which means that my relationship with Dinei Akam, even if for them they are Doraisas, they are part of Shiva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, but my relationship with having to submit to those is an obligation Nedera Bana. This appears to be the Shita of the Beis Shmuel and Evan HaEzer also in Siman Chav Ches. And the Beis Shmuel talks about whether a person would cheat on his taxes, Chas V'Sholom, a person would misappropriate his own money and not give it according to local chok, and he would be Makadish, a woman, with this money. So a person would give money which was supposed to have been paid taxes, he was giving it instead to a woman and to be Makadish her. So would that be a Kedushin or not? If the money really is not his, it belongs to the government, so he's giving money that has no value, it's not his at all. If it's an obligation to Rabbanan to pay the tax, then one could argue that she would still be Mikudeshes Nederaisa, and he seems to come out that because he understands the Dinah Mahusa obligation of the Jew to be a Rabbanan, she would still be Mikudeshes. So he, like the Rama, holds that this is a Rabbanan. The Chassam Sofer, the Avni Miluim, argue quite vehemently that the obligation of the Jew to adhere to Dina de Mahusa is a delisa, which means if I am bound to pay my taxes because they are given the authority to levy taxes, men haTorah, so I am submitting to their delisa requirement or authority to levy taxes, so by my paying the taxes I'm actually bound by that men haTorah. So it's important to be mindful of that. The Sila comes up just to give one last leg to this, and then we may want to discuss it for a bit. One last facet of this. The Sila comes up, what would be our situation if the money we were making while living abroad was being made in Eretz Yisrael? There is an interesting discussion as to whether Dina de Malchusa will apply in Israel where the government is not a Malchusa, which means that the government, and I don't mean this as a snide statement, not at all, what I'm saying is it's not the Malchus of Akkum, that a government that's run by Jewish people, by Jewish leaders. So there's a question whether they also work within the framework of Dina de Malchusa, or whether this was only a precept that was relevant to non-Jewish governments. And there's strong arguments in the Rishonim to say, again, that Ram and the Dorim and Chavches speaks about this, that living in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's a Torah-observant government or not, whether it's Malcha Yehuda or Malcha Yisrael or not, but if we're living under a Jewish government, so then there are those Rishonim who argue that Dina de Malchusa laws don't apply because a Jewish governor does not have the right to appropriate my money not according to halacha. So there are those Rishonim who say that if I'm living in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's a religious Jewish government, meaning Malchei Yehuda, or a somewhat religious Malchei Yisrael, or whether it's a secular government, there are those who say that in Eretz Yisrael, the Dina de Malchusa structure evaporates, because there we all consign ourselves strictly to Torah law, to Choshen Mishpat and to Halacha, and therefore it's not so clear that someone could institute tax requirements that might veer from Torah obligation. There are discussion in Akronim as well as to whether elected officials, Jewish or non-Jewish, whether they ever enter into the echelon of Malchus, and it seems from many, many Rishonim that Dina de Malchusa is a government such as a monarchy or a dictatorship. But if it's a democratic type of setup where we're actually taking votes and selecting our own leaders, so there are those Achronim who say that Dina de Malchusa never applies there. Okay, so again, we're not going to come out with concrete halacha lemaisa. This is really just to give us a halachic framework of the theory of the halacha. But let us wrap up, and if there's a few seconds for questions, Lahadil Torah Lahadira, I'm sure we can discuss them. But we have a situation, we are living in Golis. We are not ruling ourselves. We have come under the leadership of the local government, wherever we live. They certainly have a right to institute laws that involve paying taxes, the government, govern what we do with our money and to whom we pay our money. And that authority to levy taxes seems to be either part of Sheva Metzus B'nei Noach, it's a deraisa authority, or as we said, it even transcends that. It's for Tovah Saradim, and that's part of Torah in itself. As far as my being bound to submit to that, there are some who say that is a Torah obligation on me, others say that it's at least a derabbanan. There are three streams within Rishonim to explain the theory behind it. Is this a condition of residence, and that's why I have to pay the taxes? Is this lest I be evicted? Or is this because when I opt to live in a country, I really waive partial rights to my money because the government can treat me like a captive and do what it wishes? But halacha l'maisa, each situation may be different with regard to living in one place and making money in another jurisdiction. But certainly if I'm living in one country and I'm earning my income in that country, I am bound, possibly deraisa, certainly derabbanan, I am bound to pay taxes. I may not evade this obligation. I may not be deceptive. And may Kodesh Baruch Hu guide us to work with integrity and honesty and to also adhere to the halachic framework. Any questions? We have 120 seconds by American time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When you said about elected officials, are you referring to Eretz Yisrael, or for example in America you've got different states and you have a governor who's elected, as for example governor of California or Senator Lieberman, which was one example, it's not his kayak, he's got the kayak of an officer.
So again, it's a discussion in Achronim, primarily in Achronim.
Then you've got the kayak of the Medina. He might be able to pre-conceptually,
say,
for
example,
in California, the government might have a prayer
of Malchus. Yeah. The issue is whether matters of Malchus, whether these are limited to absolute governments. For example, and this will be another wonderful topic to discuss, but we have a discussion in Halacha. If the President of the United States or the Governor of California, do I say a bracha when I see them? Do I say a bracha?
Does it apply to monarchy or elected? Does it apply to monarchy or elected?
Correct. Right. So there is that whole avenue in halacha. Are these really malachim? Or are the malachim that halacha is concerned about those who have coercive force over me?
You can even have malachim who haven't got complete clarity as well.
That's correct. There's a wonderful shaila in contemporary poskim. If I see the king of Jordan or the king of Spain, if they have the right to execute on the spot, so I have to say a bracha for a melech. There's discussion in contemporary poskim. The President of the United States, if we still have him when I get back, but President of the United States, so he doesn't have the right to order someone executed. He does have the ability to rescind. Correct. He has the right to. Well, they can't order someone executed. However, they can rescind a court order to execute him. So would that be considered that he has the ability to make decisions that are life-binding on people? So there are many, many creative applications of this, and I'm glad we're alert to them. There are other questions, other hands up, or just discussion? Okay. By American time, it's 9:02. So I don't want to use any more of your time, but thank you very much. And again, please, if you have practical halacha l'maisa, speak to your competent person. Thank you.